You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis.
But, you know, I'm not in the Carnegie Deli with people, or I'm not hanging out at the Golden Globes. I can't seem to be part of it. I'd love to be part of a group of people, but I've never been able to do it. Even in late night, I couldn't fucking do it. And there's only about 10 people that do late night television. I like James Corden. Just the irony kind of struck me is that I was in that job for 10 years and I constantly worried about my weight and my accent. And then when I quit, they put in a fat guy with a worse accent than me.
That was a clip from Hobo Fabulous, a new stand-up docuseries from Comedy Dynamics that takes an inside look at Emmy and Peabody Award-winning comedian Craig Ferguson as he tackles the ups and downs of time on the road, discusses his life and career, and performs his act from the Hobo Fabulous tour. Hobo Fabulous is out now via the Comedy Dynamics Network, iTunes, Amazon Prime, Google Play, Comcast, Spectrum, Dish, and other platforms. And today, Craig Ferguson joins me on the podcast to talk about why he wanted to do a rockumentary-style series about his U.S. comedy tour, what it's like traveling America on a bus for 2 months, and why he now says he might be ready to stop going on the road from now on. He recalls the grind of hosting the Late Late Show on CBS 5 nights a week for an entire decade, how the experience made him fall out of love with show business for a little bit, and what it was like working with David Letterman as a producer. Craig also says he jumped into it without ever having watched a late-night show in his life, and that he wouldn't want to do a late show in today's politically charged environment. We also discuss his decision to become a U.S. citizen more than 10 years ago, the one state in America that won't grant him honorary citizenship, and why he's still paying taxes in the U.S. even though he's living these days in Scotland. Plus, we talk about Groundskeeper Willie from The Simpsons, the Scottish version of The Odd Couple, and Craig's breakout role as a character named Bing Hitler. Coming up with Craig Ferguson in just a moment.
Glasgow is very hip. Glasgow is like Berlin in the 1990s, I think. So it's very hip. There's a lot of vegan restaurants, and Scottish people actually are very good at trying other people's ways of eating. We're very good at that because ours is kind of like, you know.
You need an alternative.
Look, there's a lot of great things about Scotland, but the indigenous food is not really
our
strong point.
By the way, I just realized that I only started recording about a minute ago.
Oh, stop. Is so, that true?
That's all right. We'll just jump right here in the middle.
Yeah, I've been talking to you. All this talking I've been doing to you, I've wasted.
I haven't done that since the fifth show like 5 years ago for some reason. Maybe you're right. I am nervous because you were just saying I was mispronouncing your name.
You mispronounced my name a couple of times, but nobody heard it, so it's okay. Yeah, okay. You said Craig.
Yeah. Well, then I guess I better plug the show again.
It would help. To be honest, the reason I'm here.
Okay.
Let's just say Hobo Fabulous is the
Hobo
name of the
Fabulous.
Show, and it's on all the streamers.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Craig Ferguson, I'm not, you know what? I can do better than that. Ferguson recently returned to his stand-up roots with a lengthy comedy tour across the U.S.
Man,
and
you
now
really
it's legendary.
Got drunk at lunch. Yeah.
I think I did. Three martini lunch. and he brought a camera crew to record the experience for a new stand-up docuseries called Hobo Fabulous that is now available on Comedy Dynamics Network. Okay,
right. Which
so
is,
I've done
which
my
is
job
like
there.
Amazon and all the crackle
Amazon,
and Pipple
Apple,
and Google and
yeah.
Zippy and Tito and Regis and whatever the hell okay. else people watch TV on now. I don't know.
Now, you're from Glasgow, is that
I
right?
I am from
okay.
Glasgow,
originally?
As you say. Yeah, well, I was born in Glasgow in Springburn Hospital in 1962, which is in the northeast of Glasgow. And then when I was 6 weeks old, my parents moved to a little town just outside of Glasgow called Cumbernauld. And I grew up in this Cumbernauld, which is kind of a suburb of Glasgow,
okay.
I imagine.
Now, what is someone from Glasgow, what are they called? It's a Glaswegian, is that right?
Glaswegian, very
Glaswegian.
Close.
Okay.
Glaswegian, yeah.
Okay.
Glaswegian or Glasgow Keely if you're, or a Ouija if you're being derogatory okay. about us. But that would be
yeah.
unwise.
You know, the one thing I like about Glasgow is that it's actually pronounced the way it's spelled.
Well,
unlike
Edinburgh
it
is pronounced Edinburgh, and Glasgow yeah. is pronounced Glasgow, even although you say Glasgow. It's spelled
okay.
Glasgow,
okay,
but it's pronounced Glasgow.
What is it?
Well, actually,
that?
If you're from Glasgow, it's pronounced Glasgow. So
was that some like ancient Scottish trick to fool Vikings or something? I feel like there must be some history to like the pronunciation of things.
I don't know. Look, I don't know much about the Vikings. Yeah. I'm not a historian, but I don't think they ever turned up at a country and said, "You know what, friends? We can't pronounce any of the names. Let's go and pillage and murder somewhere
yeah.
else."
Yeah. Oh,
and they also talked like Dracula.
This is Edinburgh. Oh, shit.
We were looking for Edinburgh.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, this is a completely different place. Also, we talked like Dracula.
Yeah.
Nobody knew that the Vikings all talk like Dracula.
Yeah, I think I figured it out, though. I think what it is Scots add a syllable to everything, and the English remove a syllable from everything. And that's how, like, something that ought to be pronounced Chestershire is pronounced Cheshire, or
right.
Buckingham Palace is Bucknam Palace. And don't even get me started on Wales.
Wales is it's a tricky language, the Welsh. It's also a very hard accent to do correctly. The only way
yeah,
to do it
you
is...
You just have to be dark.
The way to do it is try and think of Anthony Hopkins.
Is he yeah. Welsh?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know
of course
that.
He is,
I thought he was English.
No, huh. I think he'd be very offended if you said that.
Yeah, imagine yeah. so.
Yeah, be very offended.
Now, you live in Scotland again now. You've
I do.
Back,
I, live in
right?
I live in Scotland again. I'm living there right now. I'm still an American, though.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's weird because I've tried to explain to the IRS that now that I live in Scotland, maybe I shouldn't have to pay taxes yeah. in America. But they said, no, when you became a citizen, that's kind of the deal. And I'm like, okay. So, I'm an American living abroad in the country that I'm from.
That is bizarre. How did you come to that decision?
I don't know. I married an American and then she wanted to go and live in Scotland.
Oh, really?
Well,
oh, that was partly her?
Oh, it was all her, mostly.
No kidding.
It wasn't all her, but it was very much driven, like most things in our life, it was driven by Megan's insistence.
Okay.
You're married, right?
Yeah, I get it.
You know,
I totally get it.
Yeah, he's like, let's go over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm totally fine. She always has better ideas than I have anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, let's do that then. You're good at thinking up things. Let's do that.
And I read that you live in, I think, the first non-fortified country home in Scotland. Is that right?
Yeah, I do.
What does that mean?
Well, it was built at a time when people thought, look, you know, it's 1681. There aren't going to be any more wars now. We don't have to build castles anymore. Let's build a nice big house. And, you know, then apparently there were some wars after that.
It didn't work out so well.
Well, you know, things happen.
Now, when you choose to buy a non-fortified country home, do you then have to double down on home security and surveillance cameras and that kind of thing?
Yeah,
or what?
Moat, troll, all that kind of stuff. Dogs, a lot of dogs. hounds, really, I suppose. After about 50, it's hounds. Release the hounds. One of the reasons why I love the house is it was never a prison. It was never a military installation. It was never a, you know, it was never a garrison for soldiers. It was there's
yeah,
no torture.
It doesn't have a dungeon.
Well, the thing is, it has
or
cellars.
Or does now?
Oh, you mean the gym? Yeah. No, it has a bit of sort of a dungeon, but I think it was not really a dungeon. It was more a sort of
cooling off space.
Yeah, wine cellar. Yeah, naughty step. It's the naughty step.
Yeah.
You'll have to go and sit in the naughty step for your treasonous, seditious behavior.
How long have you been an American citizen now?
since 2008.
Oh, okay. So this this is your anniversary, sort of.
11 years. 11 this year. Wow. Yeah. Huh. I mean, I've been living here. I've been, you know, to all intents and purposes, an American since 1995.
Okay.
I have the green card and all that kind of stuff. But
advantage of the system.
I don't know. I've been paying tax since 1995, and I feel I feel like if you
all right, then we're all cool.
Yeah, I think if you live here and you pay tax, that's okay. And if you don't pay tax, then they'll put you in jail.
Yeah. Now, I remember on the show when it was a big deal when you got your citizenship.
Oh, yeah. When the late night show, for sure. Yeah.
And and what you also, I think you got, you had this thing where you were going and getting state citizenship or becoming an honorary citizen of various states.
Well,
in the
US. I thought I could cut through the red tape by becoming an honorary citizen of every state in the union.
Oh, there you go.
And then I would just be a citizen of the United States. But unfortunately, I was let down by Oregon.
Really?
Yeah. The mayor of Portland, I believe, objected. So Oregon let me down.
That is not one of the states that I would have imagined.
I know. Everyone else is fine. I'm actually still a fully paid up member of the Nebraskan Navy, which is a real thing.
Do they actually have a boat?
I don't think they have a boat, but they have a list of people who are members of the Nebraskan Navy, and I'm one of them. It was just some fun that we were having on the show, and it kind of caught fire a little bit because I suppose, I think it was about 2007, 2008. It was just at the end of the Bush-Cheney administration, and people were, I don't know, people were a bit down.
Yeah. Now, how many states are you?
So there's 50. Man, you should really know this. I mean, this is one of the things that they're going to ask you if you want to become a citizen.
I don't think
you were probably born
pass
here.
The citizenship test.
Probably not. Although it's harder now. When I did it, do you like gum? Do you hate Al Qaeda? And in you come. But now it's much tougher, I think.
So is Oregon the only one that you don't have an honorary citizenship?
I think so. I think that's the
that's
one.
That's it.
I don't know. Wow. I can't remember now. I don't know where.
How about territories? Did you do territories? Guam, Puerto Rico?
I did not, although I think Puerto Rico showed up for me. I think they did. Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, now if someone would just show up for Puerto Rico.
Yeah, really? I'm not kidding. Yes.
Now, speaking of the Late Late Show, what was it like? I've always wondered, I can barely do this podcast twice a week.
I noticed.
To do for 10 years, five nights a week, that's got to be exhausting.
It was.
How do you feed that beast?
Some days it's easier than others, I mean, some days nothing happens. So, it's a monologue about the Latvian Independence Day. And some days, something so awful happens that no comedy can reach it.
Yeah.
And some days Dick Cheney shoots his lawyer in the face and everybody wins, I mean, so it's a tough thing to do. And I understand. People say, if you were doing it now, you'd have to do Trump every night. And you go, well, yeah, but the good thing about Trump is he gives you something to do every night. That's why these guys are doing it. It's gives you something to talk about.
Yeah. But don't you think that people are kind of getting fatigued by it, too?
I don't know about people, but I am. I don't know. I can't speak for anyone else. But I'm sick of hearing people I agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind people I don't agree with. I'd never want to hear them. But when I hear people I do agree with talking, I'm like, shut up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Talking about something else.
In the Obama era, I could think about other things. And it seems like it's just impossible to think about anything other than Trump.
You have to concentrate on it, I think.
It's exhausting.
I don't actually think the fault is squarely at the door of Mr. Trump. Mm-hmm. I think that the media, that all media now is social media.
Mm-hmm.
And all media... the media now, media used to, I don't know where to go for news. I don't know where to go. I don't know who to trust. The media to me now seems like toddlers playing soccer. You know what I mean? It's like the ball goes that way and everybody runs. Yeah. There's nobody taking an outside view or thinking of the long game. They're just following the ball to its next position. And I find it exhausting and I refuse to participate.
Well, the late night, too, has changed so much over the past few years because now it just seems like it's all about getting some clip to go viral.
Yeah,
instead of just maintaining your audience on TV.
I'm very sympathetic to the late night hosts who are dealing with that because that pressure was beginning to happen as I left.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it then. And I didn't watch late night television before I was on it. I didn't watch it when I was on it because I was on it. And I don't watch it now because I don't watch late night television. But I'm very sympathetic to the problems and the pressure that these men and women are under. It's mostly men, let's be honest. They're under about, you know, trying to get the next thing. Whatever trick you can use to fire the imagination of the bovine Kashkas who are soaking up all media.
I think that you said that was when you fell out of love with show business on The Late Late Show.
Yeah, it demystified it for me a little bit.
What's that relationship like now?
It's not great. I've always had a kind of fractious relationship with show business. I don't want to talk about things I don't want to talk about. So that's very difficult now because people will say, I came from somewhere. There's been a horrible shooting today, and so people ask you about it. I don't want to talk about that. I'm not qualified to give an informed. First of all, I don't know enough about it, and I don't want to add an emotive piece of show business to something which is already horrifying.
So you feel an added pressure if you were doing that today to be political and to weigh in on serious subjects, huh?
I don't know if I would feel an added pressure. I think I would be confused by it because not doing it would be seen as taking a position.
There is no safe
doesn't sound like, well, maybe it is, that's what it is. Maybe there is no safe place. There is no neutral position. You can't engage the clutch and have the engine run. Nobody allows that. So everything, you're either, whoever you're dealing with, you're either for us, or if you're not with us, you're against us.
Yeah.
In every single position, about every single thing, all the time, and I couldn't cope with it. I don't like it. I've lost all respect for all media, and so this is the only good thing in the media is this podcast right here.
It's the only that doesn't say very much. Well, what was your catchphrase? It was "It's a great day in America."
It's a great
was
day
your
for
catchphrase
America,
on that show?
Say, yeah,
would you still say that? It almost seems quaint today.
Yeah, it kind of. Well, you know, I used to say it when I started stand up, and I stopped saying. That's why I did the Hobo Fabulous tour because I wanted to, you know, have a catchphrase that meant nothing. It's not that there's anything wrong with saying it's a great day for America. It's all right. I mean, look, it wasn't a great day for America every day when I was saying it.
Yeah.
But it was just a kind of, it was like a little piece of fluff or something. But then it became charged. Like the idea of saying it now, you know, if I said it to an audience, and this is why I stopped saying it at stand-up, half of the audience would get mad would cheer, and the other half of the audience would get mad at the people who were cheering for me saying it's a great day for America. And, you know, I was like, fucking Hobo Fabulous. You know, there you go, fine. Because Hobo Fabulous doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Now, I don't think a lot of people realized it, but your show was produced and owned by David Letterman's company, Worldwide Pants.
For sure.
Was he a pretty good boss to work for?
In the sense that there was no contact between us. Yeah, absolutely.
Most people would define that as a good boss.
He was a great boss. Look, whenever I needed
Dave's...
Not a lot of notes. Whenever I needed his help, he always gave it.
Really?
I didn't ask for it very often. I didn't need it very often. But the mere fact that he was there was, it's really, the late night show that I did, first of all, it'd be impossible to do it now. But it was really impossible. It would be impossible to do it at any point. What happened was an accident of history. During the late night wars at the end of Johnny Carson's tenure of The Tonight Show, CBS were so desperate to get Dave to go there to create a franchise that they gave him 2 hours of real estate in the network. That was the deal.
Yeah.
Dave owned the time period. If you know anything about television, that just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So he owned that time period, which meant as long as Dave was on the air and I didn't piss Dave off, I was kind of bulletproof. You know, so I made a point of not pissing Dave off as much as I could. And which it's pretty easy because Dave wasn't paying much attention to me. He had his own show to do.
Right.
So
But still, having that kind of mafia protector over you at CBS is pretty nice.
A little bit, because they it's not a natural marriage, me and a corporation like CBS.
Right.
It would never have survived without Letterman. So if you hated me in the late night show, it's David Letterman's fault. If you liked me on the late night show, it's me.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of cool to hear because, you know, I always heard that when Letterman had his show after Carson, Late Night with David Letterman?
Yeah.
That Carson owned his show, and Carson would kind of have veto power on which guests he could get. And, you know, if he had a guest on Johnny Carson, he didn't want him going on Letterman and that kind of thing. So
yeah, I think that Dave wasn't like that with me at all. Mm-hmm. He was whenever I asked for his help, he always gave it. So I didn't ask for it much. Didn't have to.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Carson, what was Tom LaSalle like? Tom LaSalle, the
Peter
guy who
LaSalle.
Worked...
Tom, sorry, Peter Tom's LaSalle. His son. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Batting 1,000 a day. Peter LaSalle, who had been on the Carson show since like the 70s, I think.
The only reason I was able to survive in late night, and the only way I could do anything was because of Peter. Peter gave me the job in the sense that when I auditioned for it, he championed me in the job. He tutored me and nurtured me through it. He taught me everything I know about that kind of thing. And he was and is a gentleman and was delightful.
Yeah, and he's still with us, right?
He's one of the few old school
Carson guys who are still around.
Yeah,
anymore.
Yeah, he's not working anymore. Yeah, yeah.
He must have had some stories, I bet.
Yeah, you'd have to ask him about that.
But he doesn't do interviews, apparently. I know a bunch of people who have tried, and he won't talk.
No, Peter has never been comfortable being in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the reasons why he became so successful as a producer. He does not need to feed his ego with visibility, which as I get older, I admire it more and more and more and aspire to it for myself. This may be the last round of interviews I ever give for anything.
That would be very sad if this was your last interview.
Yeah, no, because you're like,
it's really bad.
Craig, his last interview. I don't know if his last interview, this particular one, but this round of publicity that I'm doing right now for the Hobo Fabulous thing, I think after that, I'll stop.
Yeah.
You know, the difficulty is I'm doing a game show for ABC next week, and they're very nice people, and they're paying me good money, and it's a good job, and it's a good show, and I'm proud of it. And they will at some point come to me and say, we want to do publicity for this. And so I suppose I'll have to do it for that. But I don't enjoy it. I really don't.
Publicists must love you.
Yeah. They always did. You know. But the thing is, you have to pretend too much. I have to pretend too much. And pretending, it's exhausting. Especially as you get older and you think, I have to really... pretend to like everybody is bullshit.
I can't imagine. I don't like dinner parties, much less having to do this
exactly. This is like going to a wedding every fucking day.
Exactly.
You know, it's just unbelievable.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more when we come back in just a minute. For over 15 years, Oris has been making purely mechanical watches in Holstein, Switzerland. Staying true to a rich heritage, Oris is one of the few Swiss watch companies to remain independently owned and operated. Because of that independence, Oris has the freedom to follow its own path. They're focused on bringing change for the better, which means making choices that are ecologically, socially, and financially responsible. That includes ocean conservation and recycled plastic partnerships. Of course, that's along with Oris's more than century-long commitment to making inventive, high-functioning Swiss-made watches that serve a real purpose, at a price that makes sense, the best possible watch for the money. Comprised of four themes, diving, aviation, motorsport, and culture, Oris watches are made for everyday wear. Shop the many different unique styles at oris.ch/kick. You're sure to find one that's your style and suits your taste. That's oris.ch/kick. And now, back to the podcast. Speaking of The Tonight Show, I'm curious, did you have much of a reference for Late Night or Johnny Carson when you were a kid growing up in Scotland?
No.
That wasn't on the air there, was it?
No, it wasn't. And I had no reference to it. The only thing I knew about Johnny Carson... I mean, obviously, I was aware of him. He's a huge star all over the world. But When I was 13, I came to America with my father to visit my Uncle James, who lived in Long Island. And my father and my Uncle James and my Aunt Susan would watch Johnny Carson at night, and they would laugh and enjoy it. And so I was aware that they liked it. And when I was in the 3 weeks, I think I was 3 weeks into working in late night when Johnny died, and I didn't know what to do. And I went to Peter. I said, Peter, I have no idea what to do. I have no reference to Johnny, and I don't want to be fake about it, but I really have no connection. And he said, do you have any point of reference to him at all that's personal? And I said, and I told him the story I've just told you about my dad and my Uncle James. And he said, well, do that. Huh. Tell that story. And I did. I told that story. And that worked. And Peter was always very wise about that. I mean, he taught me a lot about, he would always say, you know, make it personal is always better. And he always said, and he's 100% right, there's always another joke. Mm-hmm. You know, if a joke's going to cause trouble, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it? And the answer is always, nah.
Yeah.
There's another joke tomorrow. If you're doing a show every day, there's always another joke. It's no big deal.
Make it personal. That's pretty good. And you did a good job of that, I have to say.
Well,
I mean, as late night shows go, you were pretty good about having a natural rapport. And
well, I was
talking
lucky
about your life and that kind of thing.
I was very lucky because I had no point of reference, so mm-hmm. I didn't know how it was done. I didn't know how it was done properly or at all. But by a weird confluence of events, which will never happen again, I had Peter LaSalle, and I had David Letterman, and I had the protection and the nurture of two giants.
And Les Moonves. Let's not forget him.
Let's forget him.
He's doing well these days.
Let's just forget him.
Okay. So then if not Johnny Carson, I'm curious, who would have been your comedy influences when you were young? Were they Brits or were they Americans?
Well, comedy influences were from different sources. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the most kind of profound influences on me as a young person was Billy Connolly, who's a Scottish comedian.
Oh, yeah.
And Billy was, like, for people of my socioeconomic group, Billy was Jackie Robinson. I mean, before Billy, it was nothing really. At least I didn't think so.
Right.
As I look back on it now, I think that's probably not true. There were many Scottish entertainers who did very well down through the years.
Right.
But I wasn't aware of them, but I was aware of Billy.
Well, yeah, he broke into the mainstream. He had a pretty popular sitcom on American TV.
Right, well,
that,
in the UK, Billy is a huge star and remains so.
Yeah.
And he packs out huge houses and, you know, he's Sir Billy now and he's, you know, he's a national treasure. He writes a book every 10 minutes and it becomes a bestseller.
I didn't know he had knighthood.
Yeah, it became a knight,
Are you interested in that?
No, not in the least. That's that is the opposite of what I believe. But that's not to say that I think Billy's wrong. It's just not a system that I endorse.
Oh, really? Were you for Scottish independence then? Or not to get it all political or all.
No, here's the truth about this. No, if I give you any opinion here about that, it'll hit the press in Scotland, and I don't need that shit in my life. So, so what I'll say is, you know, it's, there's arguments on both sides, blah, blah.
Now, you took a somewhat circuitous route to comedy, right? You were doing factory work and...
I have had a circuitous route to everything in my life. I think so. I think that I don't know what happened to me when I was a kid. Something not good was going on when I was a kid, and I don't know if that was real or in my head.
Were you rebellious or
nihilistic? Yeah, but I was frightened more than anything. I mean, I like to dress it up that I was. You know, I was rebellious and crazy and a punk rocker and stuff. And it looked like that from the outside. But the truth is, all I remember is just being terrified nearly all the time. You know, I was terrified. I was terrified in fights. I was terrified. The only time I didn't feel terrified is when I was drunk. You know, and I don't think it's important to me anyway how that happened. But that is my reality. Now, as I look back on it, look, my life is my fault. You know, what happened in my life is me. You know,
We can blame someone else or parents or whatever.
You know, these people did this to me and those assholes did that to me. And that's, you know, it might be true, but it doesn't fucking help.
Yeah.
You know, It doesn't help me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for some reason that for some people that may be essential. For me, it's not.
Yeah.
I don't get anything from it.
Then what was your big break in the UK as a comedian?
I don't know if I've had one.
You haven't had one yet?
Yeah.
I'm still waiting.
What I did was I did a character. During the punk rock, I did a character who was a kind of like Scottish, super Scottish thing. It was a very kind of localized character. But I gave him the name Bing, as in Crosby, and Hitler, as in... So the character's name was Bing Hitler, which caused a bit of noise at the time. And it was a good act. I mean, it was very, very local, but it was good. Yeah. And I was a kid, and I was crazy, and I was drunk. But I was funny.
Yeah.
And it's funny that taxi drivers over 50 in Glasgow still talk about that.
I still remember.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Do you remember it? Can you give us a little bit of Bing Hitler?
It was a guy, he kind of talked like this, which is a regional dialect in Scotland. And he would talk like us, and he would always talk about things that he hated. And, you know, he hated the oddest things. I mean, he hated the English, but he hated bees and whales and mice and stuff. I mean, it was like such a stupid, stupid thing. But it was my way in, I suppose. It was a character and a comedy name and a comedy a comedy voice and a comedy outfit, and that all helped.
Was he an actual Nazi?
No, on the contrary, I think.
Was he abusive, like Bing Crosby?
No, I never mentioned the other than he would say my name is Bing Hitler, and then he would never talk about either Bing or Hitler.
Great.
So there was never any mention to singing or the Third Reich. It was just. It was just some stupid name.
And somewhere, I think on Wikipedia, of course, which is always reliable.
No. I've been naughty about Wikipedia in the past, but the truth is, I think they are pretty, they're pretty reliable. They're good at catching themselves.
Better than IMDb?
Oh, yeah. IMDb is a corrupt monster. Yeah. The use of the corporate overlords.
I love IMDb because, you know, they'll have, trivia about someone. And I looked at your trivia and like, one of your trivia things was that you met Don Rickles.
Well, it might be trivial to them, but it's not trivial to me. I loved Don.
Did you like him?
I loved Don. Yeah, I was friendly with Don.
He was great. I only met him once.
He's awesome. The first time he came to my house, he gave me a dollar and said, buy your wife a better house.
And then you bought a fortified country mansion. Or non-fortified, sorry.
I don't know why he would think I should have to buy my wife a house, but apparently, anyway, he was, what he was like. He did all stuff like that.
Well, I was going to say, on Wikipedia, I read that you played Oscar in a production of The Odd Couple.
I did,
at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
I did, yeah.
I had to ask, was that you as American Oscar or a Scottish Oscar?
No. I did it with a Scottish actor who's sadly no longer around, a guy called Gerard Kelly, who was a genius, just an amazing performer. And Kelly, to all intents and purposes, directed this production as well. And it was The Odd Couple, written by Neil Simon. But we changed it to two divorced guys in a flat in Glasgow. And the
same,
only...
But the script was the same?
Exactly the same.
Oh, that's
and
great.
It worked fantastic. The only thing we touched in dialogue is we changed... During the script... The text of it, there's a reference to a baseball score, and we changed it to a soccer.
Football.
And that was the only thing we changed, and everything else was exactly the same, and it played gangbusters. The interesting thing about that play is that it's so well written and so good that to go out with, I mean, I've never had that experience before or since, where you go out every night armed to the teeth with material you just know you're going to slam. Three jokes a page, boom, boom, boom. And it is unbelievable. I mean, there's a reason why that's a work of legend. It is a masterpiece.
I'm just trying to picture it as a Scottish production.
It really works.
Pay to see that.
Yeah, and so did a lot of other people. Yeah.
I can't stand little notes on my pillow.
No, it's garbage. Yeah. You know what I mean? It still works. Yeah. It works really well. I would do it again in a heartbeat. Well, because it's not necessary. What it is and why it's so successful, and one of the things I so admired about it, is that it is a universal theme. Yeah. And that's what I've always tried to do in comedy, is to not isolate people with surface level fripperies, but to go for universal themes. Love, yeah. sex, death, the weather, food, despair, fear, you know, yeah. excitement. Things that humans experience. That's yeah. what I'm interested in doing.
Well, you know, a few more years, you could probably do the Scottish production of Sunshine
Boys. Sunshine Boys, yeah. Don't think I haven't thought about it.
I would see that.
Yep.
I would go
that would also work. That would also work.
Well, let's talk some more about Hobo Fabulous.
Okay.
You've got this great new stand-up docu-series.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, it almost feels like you're kind of going back to your rock band roots because it reminded me a lot of a rockumentary. And I
well,
don't think that anyone's done that with a comedian before.
Well, that's why I did it like that. Yeah. I did it like a rockumentary because I had watched the one on Journey mm-hmm. and the one on Rush. And I don't like these bands.
No.
But
you like the documentary?
But I loved the documentary. Yeah. And actually, as I watched the documentary, I started to like the guys in the bands. And then I realized, well, this is a great way for me to make television for people that hate me. I can do it. People that don't like me, they can watch it and go, oh, okay. I still hate them, but I enjoyed the documentary.
How long was the tour and how many cities did you hit? Because it seemed like it was a long tour.
Yeah, it was. It was like 60 dates.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a long tour.
And a bus tour, no less.
Yeah, well, that's how I do it. I was a drummer
in
rock
close
bands.
Close quarters with a bunch of people like
well,
that?
It's me and Tomas, who's okay. the tour manager, and Ronnie, right. the bus driver. And then when the film crew are there, they're there.
Okay,
they're not. But the film crew okay. was Joe, the director, and Adam, the sound guy,
yeah.
and there was a GP, and that's mm-hmm. it.
And Tomas also runs your Twitter, I heard. Is that right? You
have yeah,
a
although
Czech
I
guy running your Twitter.
I do, yeah. I took back the reins of it today,
oh,
yeah. as a matter of fact.
Really?
I've been tweeting all day today, like it's a picture of Pasadena, and
yeah.
I was on Larry King earlier, and I did Adam Carolla's show, I did a picture of that, and yeah. I'll do a picture of you and I, and then I'll give it back to Tomas. But I'm taking it back
okay.
for the day.
Okay. It wasn't like he was starting to tweet out a bunch of like...
Czech
political opinion, far right, like...
No. You know what it was? It was...
No more immigrants.
I got very sick of plowing myself with that negativity of mm-hmm. social media, and so,
yeah.
and I didn't want to have it, but I was advised at the time that closing it down would be something that I would regret later, and I took that counsel and said, well, I don't want to have anything to do with it. And they said, well, give it to someone else to do
yeah.
it, and they can post out tickets.
Yeah.
links and shit, but and so Tomas did it very well for a long time, and he'll probably do it again after today, but today I thought, well, I'm back in LA, I'll do it a little bit, but I haven't done it for a year, I think.
Don't miss it, I'm sure.
No, I don't. I actually feel like anyone I talk to about social media, not just people in show business, but anyone I talk to about social media seems to have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone seems to have a problem with it. And I'm like, well, speaking of someone who has given yeah. up stuff I have a problem with, here's what you want to do if you want to stop smoking. Stop putting them in your fucking mouth and lighten
yeah.
them. And after that, you know, deal
yeah.
with the feelings of that. But the first thing you got to do is, you know, because I noticed, because I'm back on it today, people go on social media to complain about social media. And I'm like, what the hell? There's a slight amount of irony in this, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's an addiction. And I know you're someone who has dealt with addiction.
Yeah.
You know, granted, we're talking about real addiction.
No, I think all of these things are related. It's not alcoholism, obviously, mm-hmm. but I think all of these, kind of weird... compulsive behaviors are all related in mm-hmm. some way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not a T-Rex, the T-Rex of alcoholism, but it is the annoying gecko of social media. they share a similar DNA,
yeah.
you know.
I'm assuming this was like an hour-long set that you were doing on
hour
the tour.
Nearly 2 hours,
wow.
really, I think. Yeah, most nights.
When you're building that, do you work that material in Scotland, or do you have to come over to the U.S. first?
No, I work exclusively in America. I did
okay.
one day in Scotland this year at the Edinburgh Festival because I hadn't done it in 20-something years, and I thought, I'll give it a go. And I did, and it was fine. I did one night and did a show, and it was great, and that was it. And I don't feel the need to do it again. My professional life, my artistic life, seems to be in America.
first of all, you're doing that 60-day tour. Then do you have to, or before that, do you have to then do weeks or even months working on the material in the U.S.?
Well, what happens is the system that I've used for a number of years now is that Joe Bolter, who directed Hobo Fabulous and was the front end of the horse in Late Night, that's how he got started. Joe and I will write a bunch of stuff down. And then I will go to a club called the Comedy Works in Denver and do two shows a night for a week.
Okay.
And figure out what the show is from that.
Okay.
And then at the end of the week at the Comedy Works, it is what it is. Really? And the audience that comes to see me at the Comedy Works, because I've been doing that system now for about 10 years or more, they know what we're getting into. Mm-hmm. And that really helps.
That's a tight schedule, though. To be able to hone that in that space of time.
Well, it's boot camp. And I must get used to the idea of talking it in the past tense because I'm not going to do it again.
Yeah, you say that on the show several times that you're kind of sick of touring and you don't think you're going to do it anymore.
I'm sick of hearing me. I mean, really, it's funny that, which is weird, the irony of talking about it to you about how much I've... But the truth is, See, there used to be a time when you could tune out, I guess, other people's opinions, but now you can't, and they're everywhere. And I don't want to participate in everyone's discussion. Also, I've said everything I want to say. I'm fucking done. So I feel like, you know, I can do a game show for ABC because it doesn't require me to give opinions.
Okay.
And I can do. There are some things I want to do. There's an independent film that I'm going to direct next year. And I want to do that, and I like the challenge of that, and I'm much less interested in visibility than I was even a year ago, and certainly much less interested than I was 20 years ago. I don't care to be famous; it's too unpleasant.
Is the thing with giving opinions that there's just the potential for so much blowback right now, or what is it?
I think a little of that. I don't mind that so much because, you know, if you're going to give your opinion, then you invite someone else to give their opinion.
Sure.
I mean, by the very nature of it. So I don't really mind that so much. I'm not one of these kind of, everyone gets offended too easily. I say that in the act, but I actually don't really believe that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's okay. I think it's okay for people to get offended and say what... That's all comedians are doing, just exercising their right to say what pisses them off.
That's true.
But what it does do, what's more kind of... or what's less attractive for me in the world of show business now that it does not sing to me. I just find myself irritated by my presence in it.
Yeah, I guess you say that you're not that worried about people getting offended, but one thing that you do talk about in the act is those social justice warriors who get offended on behalf of other people.
People
have no skin in the game. You don't want to rip someone apart just to signal that they're an empathetic person somehow.
Well, yeah. I don't know that, you know, complaining about these people has comedic value for me.
Right.
But the truth is, there's one way to avoid them is just not engage.
Yeah.
And that's the choice that I've made. And right up until today when I took the Twitter password back from Tomas. But I can guarantee you before midnight tonight, it goes back to Tomas and I'll no longer be part of it.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I'm already sick of it. I tweeted a picture of Pasadena.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm sure it's annoyed somebody. Why don't you post a picture of Santa Monica, bastard?
And in your act, you actually say that you met someone who was offended on behalf of you.
On behalf of all Scottish people.
All Scottish, over the character Groundskeeper Willie from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Was she really offended?
Yeah, she was. She felt
she was serious.
She felt that it was a racial stereotyping of Scottish people. To have the character of Groundskeeper Willie in The Simpsons. My argument being that Groundskeeper Willie is in shape and has a job, so most people in Scotland took it as a compliment. But I don't, you know, look, if you get offended, you get offended.
Mm-hmm.
But getting offended on behalf of other people, if that genuinely offends you, then fine.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's a little too... it's a little too difficult for me to say inappropriate things comedically if saying inappropriate things is against the rules.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, where's the comedy then?
Well, David Cross used to have this lovely comeback to a heckler I saw once where he said, the one guy was heckling about something objectionable he said, and he said to the heckler, and I think it was in one of his specials, he said, "Sometimes I say the opposite of what I believe to be true, and that's a joke."
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult to, particularly, I suppose, now a lot of people have pointed this out, you know, in Twitter and stuff like that, it's very difficult to get the nuance of that across.
Yeah.
You know, if you just see it written down, you know, the skill of the comedian is to say awful things in a way which, you know, makes them ridiculous, but they don't look ridiculous if they're just written down.
Yeah. And that lady obviously probably hasn't met a Scottish person because from what I've heard, Scots all love Willie. In fact, there's like isn't there a rivalry between Glasgow and Aberdeen or somewhere over where he comes from?
Look, I can't speak to that. I don't know, but clearly,
apparently,
to my mind,
I'm told he's very popular. Scotland.
Of course he is. Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's not necessary for anyone to get offended on my behalf.
Right.
If I gonna get offended, I can do it fine on my own.
What about Scotty from Star Trek?
Again, it was fine for comedic mining for me, but the truth is that everyone in Scotland was totally fine with it. Yeah. Well, look, he didn't sound Scottish, and we knew he didn't sound Scottish, but at least he'd made the effort.
Yeah.
You know, they had put a Scottish character in space. To my mind, he was the first one. So I got no problem with it.
Now, I do like that you tell the audience on your show to put away all their phones.
Yes.
I feel like every comedian should do that. And say no tweeting, no video, and all that.
Most comics I know and know of actually go further. They put them in these little bags that you can't open, or people have to hand them in and stuff. I never did
Chappelle
anything
does that.
That.
Yeah.
I think Dave did do that. I think he had. Well, I mean, I can't really blame him. I mean, every time he said anything, it was like on fire everywhere.
Yeah.
And
it just seems really perverse for someone to go and pay $100 to see a comic that they like, and then sit there with their phone waiting to play Gotcha and stoke a bunch of Twitter outrage and ruin their career.
Yeah, it does seem counterproductive. But I think that it also shows a profound misunderstanding of what's going on.
Yeah.
Because stand-up comedy in the room is about in the room. That's actually one of the reasons why I did Hobo Fabulous the way I did it, is because the idea is that in the room is different to what you film.
Right.
And every stand-up show that I've done and that's been turned into a special, I look at the specials and I go, they're all right. But it was better on the night. And I thought, well, how can I create something that gives that feeling of being there on the night for the home audience that the theater audience get, but the home audience never get? And that's why I made this documentary, because it gives you a sense of intimacy with the performance and what's going on happening from night to night, and what's going on with the show, as well as seeing the show. And that, I think, provides more of a sense of intimacy.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that. I like the build up to the show and the lead up. And I especially like kind of the post-mortem that you guys do after the show.
Sure.
What like jokes work, which didn't.
Yeah, that worked. I'm sure you're going to try that joke again tomorrow night. I don't know. We'll try it. Never worked in Cleveland. Let's try it. And then it did work in Pittsburgh. I mean, they're not even that far away from each other. There's no reason why a joke should not work in Cleveland and work in Pittsburgh. But and I have documentary evidence to prove it. The same joke that I told it under the same circumstances in Cleveland died on its ass and brought down the house in Pittsburgh.
Oh, it died in Cleveland. I was going to ask if it had something to do with the Drew Carey show,
no,
which was set in Cleveland.
Well, unless they're angry about my role in some way. I don't know. But it was just, it's one of those weird things about stand-up, which is, a joke that works one night will not work the next night. I was always amazed when writers would say that to me when I had writers on the late night show, and they would say, this joke will kill. And I go, oh, really? I tell you what, I'll stop. You walk out and say it, and then we'll see if it kills. Because you never know. I mean, you cross your fingers and you hope, but you never know.
Yeah. Now, probably the toughest audience is family. And your family actually, they give interviews for the documentary, your wife and your two sons.
Yeah.
What do they think about Dad's act?
Well, you'll need to watch the show to find out. But I think that they... my youngest boy, he's only nine, and it's dad's job. That's what he does, you know. And so it's very normal to him. My older son Milo, who's 18 now, has grown up with it, so it's not unusual to them. And they're both very, very bright and articulate people. And then Megan is in no way, shape, or form or afraid or enamored of...
of course not.
...of show business. Well, I feel very lucky in the sense that we're married because she's not really taken with any of show business. Yeah. Her family life has a very identifiable character outside of show business.
Mm-hmm. Well, once again, folks can watch all six episodes of Craig's new comedy docuseries, Hobo Fabulous, on Comedy Dynamics Network, which is on
Amazon
Apple.
iTunes, I think.
iTunes, Satellite, I think. Dish,
Zippy,
I think.
Zippy.
I'll just throw them all in
Pringle,
there.
Pringle. Peepoo. All the ones.
There you go. Hobo Fabulous.
Peepoo. That's the one. Yeah, that's where you get the dirty stuff.
Okay. What is the subscription price to that? Because I'm sick of subscribing to a million different things now.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what people cost.
Okay.
It depends on where you have it. Sometimes the price can be very high.
All right. Hobo Fabulous, Craig Ferguson, thanks for talking with me.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks again to Craig Ferguson for coming on the show. All six episodes of Hobo Fabulous are available now on the Comedy Dynamics Network, iTunes, Amazon Prime, Google Play, Comcast, Spectrum, Dish, and other platforms. For more information, visit comedydynamics.com. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.